What's up, guys? John here. You guys probably know me as Bucket Dad. This is Sam to my right. This is Corey Blanchard over here. We are three coaches that just kind of want to talk about the mental aspects of the game, the physical aspects, everything that happens between the lines. Hence, the reason why we went with the name Between the Lines, right? A lot of things can happen between the lines, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and we just kind of want to cover all the bases. So without further ado, let's just hop right into it.
All right, John just got out of high school, so we want to start our first podcast talking a little bit about high school and kind of some of the issues that we have with it or things that we love about it. So John, being just out of high school, how did you feel about your season?
I think high school softball is it's one of those things that it teaches you a lot more outside of the sport than the sport itself. I think you get a lot of...
Mental challenges?
Not necessarily mental, but you just kind of learn what you're made of. You know, it's a lot crammed into a very short period of time. Those girls, they have to test boundaries both in the classroom, making sure that they stay on task, that their grades are up and they're passing, they're able to go out and play. And then just being able to manage a social life along with an athletic life inside of high school, I think is probably the best takeaway for these girls.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, for sure, for college, just getting them prepared. Some things that I wrote down because specifically in Nebraska, I do think the season is incredibly sped up. So I actually took down, I went to school in Texas. And so our season in Texas, I actually went back and I looked at max preps. So I found my 2011 grad year and I looked at our season. And our season started January 15th and went to May 14th.
That's crazy.
And we had similar amount of games. In 1 month, the most games we had was 13 games. In 1 month, the most games you guys had was 21 in August. So you're basically playing almost every day in the month of August. And what's crazy, this is the other takeaway that I had. You guys had two number one pitchers, and we also had two number one pitchers. You guys pitched, your number one pitcher had 1,800 pitches roughly, and your number two pitcher had 764. Both our number one and number two had around 1,800 to 2,000 pitches. But can you imagine, like, that amount of pitches? It's only game reps, too.
Yeah, in such a short amount of time,
Like, it's not even practice reps.
Rest and recovery.
Right? Like, that's absolutely asinine when you think about
insane,
it.
That is insane, yeah.
And the more that I think about it, the more that I want to know what baseball looks like. Like, I'd love to know how many.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to know, like, I'd get some research on how many games baseball plays because...
Well, baseball has a pitch
in their
count.
Season. Yeah. Well, yeah, but like in their season, how many games do you think they play in their baseball
high school?
Season? Yeah.
I don't know. Where's my...
Because I don't think it's even close to the number of games that you guys played over 50, I think, or
no.
Close to 50.
No, it was like 30 something.
30.
Yeah.
No way, because you had 21.
We were 19 and 11.
Yeah. 30.
So then
games.
It's just crammed into August.
August.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it was a 7 week schedule.
Well,
that's
what about, like, practices, too? You got to think, how many times a week were you guys practicing, typically?
Every day.
And did you guys always do live reps with your pitchers?
No.
So what did you guys do pitching-wise?
Pitching-wise, we didn't really do a whole lot.
Did you rest them a lot?
Yeah. Pitchers didn't really do a whole lot throughout practice weeks. I think the hardest thing was the transition for the freshmen, because we had a lot of really good freshmen on our team. Those guys weren't used to that schedule quite yet. So, I mean, we were in, like, week zero, and we already had elbow injuries, shoulder injuries, just from throwing so much at a three-hour practice.
Right, that's crazy, though, isn't it? So, like, in baseball, I just feel like they keep the overhand throwing to a minimum. And so my biggest takeaway from this is when you look at that number of pitches, right, you immediately think about the pitcher. What about the catcher?
Yeah.
How many overhand throws are they having in an unnatural movement back to pitchers? Because you had one catcher. So did we. We had one catcher. Typically, like, I feel like there's really only one number one catcher.
Well, I mean,
because nobody thinks about him.
If you got 1,800 pitches and 700, that's 2,500.
And that's not even throwdowns. So that's not even live throwdowns. Yeah. Like, that's crazy to me. So I think you rarely see injuries. Or in catchers, or maybe they're just tougher, a different breed.
Yeah, we are.
Just built different. We are.
But, like, nobody ever says anything about that. And I was just thinking about that last night. I was like, that's crazy to me. All right, so having said that, how many injuries per se do you think you had this season? Or maybe kids that had minor injuries but were fighting through those injuries?
Not that many this year. I know we had one girl. She was a senior. she broke her hand and she was out for the season, but I think it was unsoftball related.
Yeah, I was going to say that doesn't sound like something that's like overuse injury.
I know, like our first baseman, both first basemen actually, and then one of our outfielders, week one, they injured their shoulder and their elbow from throwing overhand so much. But right around that time, we kind of sat down as coaches and said, hey, we're doing a lot of throwing, and our season hasn't really started yet.
That's smart, but I don't think a lot of
So we went to a lot of dry takes. Like, it's actually really cool, the baseball coach out there, one of his kids plays on the softball team, and I was watching their practice, and I'm constantly learning, trying to grow as a coach too. But I watched them. They would set up at first base, and they would just hit balls over across the field to three, and they would have them all take dry cuts, shuffle, make sure their feet were set, and get ready to throw. They'd drop the ball in a bucket, and then they'd run to the back of the line. They called it a no-throw day. Outfield did the same thing.
Yeah, I like that. That's smart.
They would do short pop-ups where they're running through into a crow hop, getting ready to throw, translating, like transitioning into a throw.
Yeah, like game-like still, you're just not making the throw.
Dropping into a bucket. But, yeah, they accomplished, I watched about 45 minutes of that practice after our softball practice was over. And kudos to him, the head coach out there. He's a great guy and really knowledgeable. So,
yeah, that's cool. I feel like not – And I'm sure there's other coaches that are like you as well, but I feel like that's not super common that coaches think about. And I understand why as well. Like, as a coach, you're trying to keep your job. Like, wins are super important. So preparation is super important. But I think sometimes we see a lot of coaches that are not always thinking about the athlete. They're thinking about the wins and things like that.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, though, like, as a coach, your product is a reflection of you. So, like, if you don't take the time out of your day to invest inside of that product and make sure that the product's going to, like, perform 100%, mm-hmm. then you are putting yourself behind the ball, you know?
Well, and I think it's more so, like, not on the coaches, too, sometimes, because the season is so jam-packed. A lot of these schools, especially the small schools, they really only have one number one pitcher. So what choice do you have? You know what I mean? And some of them don't even have a number two pitcher that can really go in and throw even close to live reps to a good team. So, like specifically, I have one pitcher who goes to a small school, and she had like four games in 1 week, and one day she had thrown 380 pitches. The other thing that I think is crazy is, and this is a question for you, on the weekends, you guys seemed like everybody always had a tournament. Mm-hmm. And so, do you have to have those tournaments? Are those required?
No.
Or are they needed for points?
I do believe the way that high school works is you have your conference play. All those games are mandatory. You have to hit X amount on your schedule, and then you have to stay under a certain threshold. So just like in college, like if we were to call up the university across the street and say, hey, do you guys want to scrimmage? They would tell us, hey, we can't. We've actually reached our number of games for the year. Our AD won't approve it, right?
Right.
So it's similar to that. Tournament-wise, coaches have the ability to go in and handpick which tournaments they want to go compete in. And there's actually a lot of the bigger Class A schools in Nebraska, at least, that'll go to Colorado, mm-hmm. Kansas, Missouri, and they'll compete, like, interstate against some of the better teams from out of state, but they'll also only do maybe one or two tournaments a month,
right? And
they
that's
won't do every weekend.
And I guess that's my bigger question, like, at what point do you ask yourselves, okay, we should be taking these weekends off?
Yeah, it's hard
when
though,
we're playing,
because
like
it's hard though, because like your big powerhouse schools for high school, they're always going to be at the top. You're trying your best to play catch up point wise with them. So like, I don't even understand how points work really right now, but like, let's say everybody starts off the season with 50 points, right?
Right.
I play you, you beat me, right? You hold on to your 50 points. I lose point whatever out of my schedule. So I think it's like everybody starts with the same number, and then you take away, and then based on the strength of your schedule, who you're playing that has more points. Like if we would have played Beatrice and beat Beatrice, that would have been like a 49-point win.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I remember
but
that.
But then we can go play against like some smaller Class C school, and we'll get 39 points. We'll actually lose points
for playing.
For playing.
Well, and so my question is, I guess, is so what if you only play your conference games? You don't play any extra games, and you win every single game.
Yeah. So within our conference, at least, you don't really have you don't really have the powerhouse schools that have those 48, 49
Yeah, but
points,
so if you're undefeated, you
doesn't matter. It's the points are based off of strength of schedule as well too.
So don't you think that's a foolish system though as a whole?
I think they're actually revamping it this next season.
I hope so because like whenever I was looking at our schedule, and a lot of the reason why our schedule did last so long in that 2011 season is because we went to regionals and whatever. So we had and the difference is like your guys is even just like your state and stuff is so sped up, whereas ours was part of, I think it was May and maybe a little bit before May, like we had like 3 or 4 weeks that we went through districts and then regionals and we would have went further. It was really lengthened out.
So jumping into that, why is Nebraska August to October, Texas was what, May to,
or it started
January to May. I know Iowa is
the same.
Well, and I think a lot of it, though, is someone had told me it's because of volleyball.
Could be, yeah.
Someone had told me when they originally made the schedule, they wanted their volleyball players to
be able to play both.
Be able to play both sports. But are they in the same season?
Yeah, they're in the same
season.
Yeah,
so
for
so
us in Nebraska,
high school,
but
yes.
In like Iowa and stuff like that,
they're
they would
not
be a separate season.
Yeah, so maybe that's what it was. And then
there is a lot of like, so like even at the school that I coach at, like there is a really hard time keeping female athletes in a sport. Like I know last season we barely had enough to fill a varsity and half of a JV team. Like majority of our JV was a varsity team as well. This year, we were fortunate enough to like triple in size after a really good year last year. But I know like volleyball, basketball, like they have a hard time filling a roster. So,
speaking on the opposite end of this too, like going completely opposing view of this, we're talking a lot about the athlete and how we could be protecting the athlete more. But do you also think that maybe generationally athletes have gotten softer? And so maybe like like the whole reason why like sports are diminishing in high school is one, I like when I was in high school, like high school sports were huge.
Yeah.
Like if you played high school sports, like you were king shit.
It was the only way to get recruited.
Yeah. And so like you, if you were good in high school, man, everybody loved you and it was great. Everybody was like, wow, they're so good, whatever. And high school was bigger than travel, it seemed like.
Yes.
To an extent in some sports, right? But yeah. Now I feel like it is completely the opposite.
Well,
some people still have those views.
For softball especially. Like, in my opinion, just from like, because I do a lot of recruiting and stuff like that, and every college coach that I talk to, they all kind of understand that like high school softball is a lot of politics, right?
But at the same time, so is travel sometimes.
Ish, not as much. But like to their point though, most of them have told me like, you'll rarely catch me at a high school game. Why would I go recruit one person and dedicate time, effort, and funding to get to that one game when I could just see that person mid-July and be at a field with 300-400 athletes that I know are all at the caliber that I want to play at?
Well, so, and I think a lot of people mistake that too. So like for instance, some college, like the Gretna pitcher, Jensen, like those college coaches are coming specifically to watch that athlete because they want to see how well she's doing. So that way in their next season, they can say, hey, look at what she did there. Let's see how she can impact us for our season, especially in high pressure situations like that. It's a different feel. It's a different vibe. And some people mistake that for, oh, that coach is out recruiting. They're really just going to watch the athlete that they've already recruited.
Well, and like Nebraska's head coach, I'm sure has been to a couple of Gretna games too, and they probably see her out and about, but. But yeah, I mean, 100%, like typically, from my experience, a college coach will not show up to a high school game in Nebraska unless they have a late jump on recruiting. So like if you're a senior getting ready to graduate and you're uncommitted and I have a roster spot that I need filled and your name fell onto my desk, I'll come out and watch you just that way I can make sure that I have you signed and committed by December.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, I mean, we were at the Maverick in Kansas.
That was crazy.
We walked in.
That was the craziest experience.
There was probably, I mean, we walked in, Texas, LSU, Iowa was there, Oklahoma State. Like, I mean, you name it, every Power 5 school. That was one of the biggest tournaments I think that we've been to. was the Maverick, which was crazy to me because like we went to the Sparkler too, and there was half
of that. Well, I was just
going
to
ask that. Well, so and that's the Sparkler's been different though.
It was blowing up on Twitter with coaches and
I think the Sparkler.
It's more of a tourist event.
Yeah,
I remember
more of an attraction
when
now.
I played for Texas Quarry and I went to the Colorado Sparkler. It was like, hey, if you're going to be recruited, this is where you go. You must go here. And I remember pitching and like Texas was behind the backstop and things like that. So similar experience to the Maverick now. I just think that so many teams go there that it's almost too watered down.
Whereas when I went there,
it was a very invitational. It's like if you go here, you are the best of the best, and you're going to compete against the best of the best. And when we went there with our 18s last year, I did think it was a good tournament, but you could tell, like, I don't ever remember playing on a field
like
close to the fields that we played on. We played on some fields that had hills in the outfield. One woman, no joke, we hit a foul ball and it cracked a woman's skull
open.
That's how low, and that's how low the fences were. It was crazy.
But I do think they said that they had, 400 teams?
Oh, yeah. So I'm saying
like 230 or
something. They've opened it up so much. And then we didn't even know it. And I'm sure if we would have asked more questions, we would have understood. But we got put into, what pool was that called?
Oh, I don't know. The fireworks or something.
Fireworks pool. And so basically, if you're a new team and you go there, you get put in that pool.
Yep.
We won our pool. And so now we got invited into the next level pool. Powerful. So when we go there next time, if we go there next time, we'll be at better fields. So I mean, I get that, but at the same time, I don't know. I just don't think.
Why hold an event so large and not only that, the cost of the event was absurd.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and we actually saved money too, which was crazy. Like,
imagine how much we would have spent.
Yeah, the tournament itself was $2,600. And then we bought out the state of play, which I hate state of play, but we bought out the state of play contract for $1,800. So we were in for $4,400 for that one tournament.
And we had an entire, all of the families, all of the players, us as coaches,
Airbnb,
in one house.
Yeah.
But honestly, I do think it was pretty.
But was it?
Cool. No, it was very cool.
Oh, yeah,
To an extent. Sometimes when you lose games, I feel like it's really easy to, like, as coaches, be like, oh, man, if I'd have done this different. So I was, like, finding myself, like, hiding away a lot. But
going back to, like, the competition aspect of it, like, I think Nebraska was one of the best representations in that tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every Nebraska team won their pool. But it just goes to show you, like, the difference in, like, skill level and competition level from state to state. Because, like, I went to the Sparkler expecting everything to be, like, a knockdown fight, right?
Yeah, every game was going to be an all-out brawl.
Yeah, like, we play a lot of games throughout our season or our schedule for our 18U team where the final score is, like, 3-2.
Yeah,
and you don't know who's going to win that game until the very last inning, you know? I enjoy coaching that way. But, like, these games,
I think it was,
17-10,
7-0.
We actually struggled because our girls were almost getting too lackadaisical. Well, even in warm-ups, they were like.
And I watched a lot of them where it was, like, the pitching was very mediocre.
They went from seeing 60s to 55.
Well, they were struggling at first to figure out
to sit on the ball.
Exactly.
They're like, oh, my goodness.
But that's also, like, going back to high school, right? Like, that's also why you have 1, 2, 3 schools that are so dominant because they have that one pitcher
pitching
can shut down everybody.
Pitching's huge.
Yeah,
if you have a good pitcher, legitimately you have a good team. That works.
So actually, really fast, thinking of that and speaking of that, Nebraska is basically open enrollment, right? So they can basically, in a sense, recruit.
Ish.
Some schools.
So they changed. No, all schools can. Basically, you can't recruit.
But you can't call but you can.
If
you say, hey, you have more playing time over here.
Exactly.
If Sam was a freshman or an incoming freshman, right, and she was at Elkhorn and I was at, like, Papio South, right, like, I could call up Sam or not even call her up, but be like, hey, you know, like, we're losing a pitcher. Got a lot of pitching time available, blah, blah, blah. Sam has the ability to enroll into my school one time.
Okay.
One time. And then you can leave one time. So basically you
do you have to sit a season out?
No. But
see, now it's different because
actually, yes, you do. So depending
I was gonna say
depending on like if you enroll.
When you enroll.
Yeah, I think it's like mid-July is the cutoff date.
Yeah, see, no matter what in Texas, that's why we never had any kids switch schools, because it was like, listen,
yeah,
if you switch schools, you're sitting out a whole season. Doesn't matter when you enroll, you're sitting out.
Yeah, but a lot of it's like NIL too. Like, well, high school kids can get NIL now too.
So. Well, and the other thing is, and I think this is a little bit controversial here, and I'm not going to say that I haven't maybe done this myself, but a lot of high school coaches are batting coaches or pitching coaches.
Uh-huh.
And or fielding coaches, and or they have ties with somebody who is.
Yep.
And so it's very easy to be a batting coach and say, hey, I love the way you hit the ball. I'd love to have you at my school.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot. And so, like, I can't remember what school it was a couple of years ago where a coach, and everybody knows this, so it's not unheard. He had like an entire team move with him. Was it Gretna?
I think so.
Yeah, but literally the entire team was like, oh, he's leaving? I'm out. And he's a great coach. I mean.
He was at a smaller.
Yeah, I can't remember where it was.
Was it like.
UTAN? Was it UTAN?
Could have been UTAN, Ashland, something.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But I thought that was crazy because that was unheard of for me.
So speaking of Gretna breaking into two schools makes them a Class B school now.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for. Does that mean they're just going to go dominate Class B?
No, honestly, so, like, there's...
I thought somebody had mentioned to me that they opted to choose to play Class A.
No.
I think they opted to play
Gretna East
B.
Is B now. Honestly,
which one's
like,
Gretna East?
Gretna East is...
the new one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
At the Class B level, in my opinion, this is just me.
Because you guys are Class B.
The easiest way to dominate high school softball is if you're a Class C team with good connections outside of a metro area,
yeah.
Like Ashland, Wahoo, some of the smaller schools that are sitting right outside of a major populace.
Yeah.
Like, they have a huge draw. Like, hey, mom, you don't want your kid in a 600-person class, you know,
yeah.
like bring them here. They'll have a better education, yada, yada, yada. I think that's the easiest way to dominate. I think Class A, like, it's not like summer where, like, Class A is like, oh, you're the best team, and Class C is like, you suck,
yeah.
Right? Like,
it's
goes based off
size.
A classroom
yeah.
size. So, like, a lot of the Class A schools are actually not very good. So, like, we played a couple of Class A schools where we've run-ruled them, like, 20 to nothing, you
yeah.
know? It's a lot easier, I think, as a B team. To be a competitive team because you have a smaller classroom size, parents want that for their kids, and it's an easier draw as an athlete to come in and compete. So.
Well, and I think some of where it gets mistaken too is like a lot of parents, because I've heard both sides of this, so I've heard what you just said, and then I hear a lot of parents that are like, oh, I want my kid to go to a Class A school because that's the only way they're going to get recruited. They're not going to get recruited from Class B or Class C, when in actuality, are you going to get recruited from high school at all?
Yeah, anymore.
Yeah.
You know, or,
well,
I mean, maybe a little bit, but I just don't think, it's not near as common as,
yeah.
obviously, travel.
From some of the smaller schools, like community colleges, stuff like that, like a lot of those coaches, they coach community college, they coach high school, they coach summer. You know, that's their full-time job. So they're coaching three different teams.
Yeah.
I think, like, that's an easy door opener from one to the other. But yeah, no, I mean, for the most part, like, even basketball used to be, you had to go to a high school game to be recruited, right?
Yep.
And, like, now you have OSA, what's the other one?
I have no idea. I don't know anything about basketball in Nebraska.
Well, the thing
AAU,
is
AAU, is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Well, AAU is everywhere.
Is like,
yeah, but no, that's what I'm saying, though, is, like, now you have all these separate independent leagues where, like, you market, hey, we're the best team in the
yeah.
state, and, like, it's easier to be recruited now. As a coach,
mm-hmm.
like, I know, hey, I'm looking for a forward and a center, and I know that there's going to be 20 of them at this tournament during December, so I'm going to go here and recruit here rather than come out and watch a high school game. I think, honestly, like, high school sports are kind of dying off, with the exception of, like, football. You know, I think volleyball is one that, like, Select is huge
yeah.
now, too. But, like,
yeah, it
football,
is very huge.
Football, wrestling, you know, those are really the only two sports that I can think of where, like, if you're at college, you have to come watch them
yeah.
play during high school.
Yeah.
But I think the main draw for a college coach, for a high school athlete, is how do they handle their business in the classroom?
Exactly.
How are they handling a social life? How are they handling, like, those three are the same as when you go to college. So, like, if you get a late start recruiting, you come over, you look at their grades, you look at their social life, you see how they handle themselves. Are they a leader on this team? And, like, that's the biggest draw. I mean, they're not going to waste their time coming to watch you play because they already know you can't.
Right. So, well, and speaking more on high school sports and how, like, maybe we think they're kind of dying, something else that was different for me in high school is, and you tell me how you guys handled this, I was able to play as a freshman because I wanted to. I played volleyball, basketball, softball, and track. Softball and track are in the same season in Texas. And so because they're in the same season, I went to my softball coach and my track coach and I said, hey, I want to do both of these. How can I make this work? And they said, well, listen, you come to our tournaments when we have our tournaments. You come to our track meets when we have our track meets. If we have one that goes on the same day, you choose whichever one you want to go to. I said, okay, awesome. And I was able to do both. I probably missed maybe two track meets. I really wasn't needed. I wasn't. They had me running the 100 meter. I was getting dusted every time. But they said, hey, that's awesome that you want to do that. We want you to do that.
Yeah.
That's really cool that you want to be a multi-sport athlete. And I don't feel like that happens anymore. Like, I get so many kids in here that love volleyball, they love basketball, they love softball, they want to play them all. And then they go to, let's just pick on the softball coach because that's what we're talking about right now. And they say, hey, coach, I want to play these other sports. They said, nope, if you're not here in the off season, you're not playing.
Well, it's no different. Like, this might be a little off topic, but, like, one of the players on our team invited to a couple of D1 prospect camps. And, like, for those people who are watching or listening that don't understand, like, a prospect camp is like, hey, I want you. Mm-hmm. You come here, you put in the time, you show me your skill set. Odds are you're probably leaving with some sort of an offer, right? And
or them being more interested in
exactly,
or writing their name on a whiteboard.
But, like, to be even considered to have an invite to a prospect, like, you have to be pretty dang good. That's the whole purpose. Like, that's why we coach. We coach to get girls to the next level. High school coaches should be coaching for the same thing. And,
absolutely,
like, I'm lucky enough that I have the ability to coach with somebody who is very like-minded during the high school season. So I know if that player came up to him and said, hey, coach, here's the deal, he'd be like, hey, get the hell out. I don't want you here on
Saturday.
He'd
be like, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Like, we'll figure it out, you know? But this coach's exact response was, well, if you're not there on Saturday, don't plan on being here on Monday.
Yeah.
I think that's crazy. Like, the whole reason why you coach youth sports is to give them the opportunity to play at the next level, to get an education, to set up for life, success. And
which is very selfish.
I think
just odd.
Back on your talking point, since I ranted a little bit, but, like, when I was in high school, I played baseball, football, wrestling. I did track. I was able to do everything because we had actual seasons.
Like,
it's very compiled.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but it's just like the things that what they ask of the athlete is crazy. Like, so I remember because I talk with you a lot about burnout now because I do get really worried about it. And I was never worried about it whenever I was in school because my coaches gave me that time to, like, say, okay, you're in this season now. I want you to go do that. I don't want you to come here and still do this.
Yeah.
And so the things that are required, like, we had one athlete 2 years ago, and I can't remember exactly, but I do know that we were still in travel season. She was waking up in the mornings for 6 a.m. workouts.
Yep.
And their first softball at their high school, not even close to their season, like, they were in spring. And they were already getting ready in spring while they were still in school, and they were doing 6 a.m. workouts. They were doing open fields that can't be run by coaches because they're not allowed to be in it yet.
Well,
so they're old upperclassmen running it.
No, they can.
They can be there.
Well, they just can't have. So it's the same thing as, like, if we were to hold a practice during high school season, it can't be a practice.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be, like, a group instruction or an open field or infield or outfield or group hitting. Like, you just can't have, I think it's seven or eight people on the field at the same time getting organized instruction.
Right.
So, like, you can have 6 people getting instruction, you just can't have 7 or 8,
right,
you know? So,
and I remember,
so what happens if you do this?
Well,
then
so
it's illegal.
It's illegal. And, but no one's going to tell on you.
No.
Like, well, no one's saying anything because everyone's doing it.
But that's exactly the thing, though, is, like, those high school coaches, they put so much pressure and say, hey, like, you better buy in, you gotta do this, you gotta do that.
Yeah.
But, like, if we as select coaches were to turn around and do the same thing, then they would be telling those high school kids, like, hey, you know what? If you get caught going to a practice, our
whole
team is disqualified.
That's actually happened to us before. But Well, I don't understand that thought process, though, because in your head, if you think about it, the more you overtrain, the less of a good product you have when you get to go play that game.
I don't believe in overtraining, but like I believe in like
I believe in mentally overtraining.
Yeah, I believe in overstimulation. Like like no, I think a lot of these kids are so overly stimulated, like with stress and just emotional stress that like that's where the burnout comes from. Because like let's be honest, like it's not hard to go out there. Football, maybe. You know, wrestling, maybe, but it's not hard to go swing a bat for 2 hours a day. You know,
no,
it's,
for
it's
sure.
not hard to go.
Well, like those
a ground
are little
ball.
Things, though.
Yeah, but like that's what this game is. It's all the little things. You know, it's more the emotional and the mental stress that comes with it. And I think like coaches definitely play a hand in that by putting too much stock into it.
Yeah. Well, and my thing on it is I feel like it's more so of just like pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of kids in this generation don't know how to handle pressure.
Well, yeah.
Because everything is like social media and all that play a huge part in, hey, look at me, look at how great I am, look at how awesome I'm feeling. And I do this every day and I do that. And they're not seeing them struggle too. So they're like putting that pressure on themselves like they should be capable of the same things. And then all of a sudden when they can't, they're like, oh, something's wrong with me. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there's a lot of empathy in youth sports now. Like a lot of like babying.
You get a ribbon no matter what kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's been a thing forever now.
Which like
participation. And,
like when I was in school, like as a freshman, we had a senior who like mentally was struggling, right? And instead of me being like, oh no, like he's having a tough day. I was like, dude, I'm going to take your spot. You know, like that was my mindset. Whereas like now it's like, a lot of kids, I think, are afraid to step up to that challenge because they see you having a bad day or a rough day, and they're like, I just don't know if I can handle that. You know, like, there's not the next man up mentality anymore, really.
I mean, to an extent, I feel like a lot of these kids are, like, they're very competitive. I just feel like, I do feel like there is a point where you can overtrain and overwork somebody.
Well, that goes
especially when they're, like, because you got to think of it like this. If you're talking about an entire team, right? Like Kobe Bryant's, those people, those kind of people are different. Like that's somebody who really like wants to go be the best, right? And there's not like a Jordy Ball. Like there's not a lot of kids who have that mentality. So if you're looking at an entire team and you want an entire team to go be successful and you have one kid with that mentality, then and you're pushing that whole team to that person's mentality, there you're probably going to have a lot of kids who could be good, but they fail.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at everybody and you're like, okay, that person's going to push themselves no matter what, right? And you might have a different opinion on this. So let them go push themselves to the max. That's awesome. Help them out. Do whatever you can to help them. You know that they have a different mindset and a different mentality, but you work with these other kids to how hard they can be pushed to achieve a better team as a whole.
Well, that goes back to like our coaching philosophy. Like, every player is different. Every player learns differently. Like you have to know your athlete
but that's,
in order to get the best out of
your That's my
athlete.
Point, though, yeah. is I think that specifically in Nebraska, high school coaches are coaching every single player on their team
to one standard.
Like they're a Jordy Ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're saying, hey, you are going to go be the greatest of all time. I'm going to make you do this every single time. And now these kids are, instead of enjoying the sport, and maybe they didn't even want to play college ball, they just want to go play the sport. And that's what all of, like, normal parents want out of their kids is to go have to do something extracurricular, so staying out of trouble, having fun, enjoying that. Maybe they know they don't want to go to college, and they're being pushed to the max to where they can't handle it, and then they quit the sport. So we're seeing a lot more kids not play the sport because they're getting pushed to a standard that they don't want to be pushed.
Well, and like going back to like some of those high school coaches and the way that they teach, like there's I can name like three or four. I won't name them, but like. The game, the sports in general are typically more mental than they are physical, right? Like everybody has the physical attributes to go out and be successful.
Yeah.
But like the mental, the mindset, like that's where you really have to be different in order to succeed.
Yeah.
So like as a coach, like your job should be bringing them up and making them believe that they can move mountains even if they can't, you know? But I've watched a couple of times high school coaches just flat out lose their shit, throw water coolers, bats, balls, like, you know, and like as a player, you kind of have to ask yourself, like, what happens if I make a mistake? You know, like if this is a response that they're going to make, like just
now,
for something
now I'm
small,
afraid like, to dive or try or to do
to
the
go
extra.
Out there and tackle somebody or take that shot or, you know, like there's so many poor humans that coach.
Well, they're just living vicariously through the athlete. Yeah. Okay, so speaking of which, do you think that male or female coaches are a little bit more aggressive or maybe a little bit more laid back?
I think it depends on the coach. Honestly, like if you look at like college softball is dominated primarily by female coaches, right? With the exception of like Oklahoma, Texas, Mike White, Kenny Gajewski, stuff like that. Like it's a very female dominated head coaching sport when it comes to college.
Okay, so don't you think that's odd, however, that high school sports, I feel like when you look around at softball, you mostly see male coaching.
Yeah, but I also feel like a lot of that comes from like, in my opinion, most of the high school coaches or staff at high schools that are female probably weren't like, you know, high school athletes. You know, like most of the female coaches I know that are at the school that I coach at, they coach sports that they played, you know, like volleyball, track. I think like it's a lot easier as a male coach to say, hey, I played baseball because this translates over into softball.
Right. That's valid, I guess.
But back to your question of...
The aggressive, who's aggressive,
yeah,
who's not?
I think Patty Gasso's aggressive.
Well, Are you kidding me?
I don't think that...
She's so laid back. When have you...
No,
like her team is aggressive is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but what I'm talking about them as a coach, though.
But yeah, I don't think male or female plays a role in that. I think it all just...
Well, and I think what is even crazier, too, is now that we're comparing kind of college and high school, when you watch a college coach, and I do this a lot, I do it often because I always compare them to myself, and I'm like, what am I doing wrong? What can I do better, right? When you watch college coaches, you notice the really good coaches, like how laid back they are. Their demeanor and how they talk in practices, I guarantee, is 10 times different than how they are on game day. But...
Well,
they're
like
very
the
relaxed.
Preparation too, right?
Exactly.
Like, to the battle. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like you.
But how often are you seeing high school coaches?
You are freaking out.
During games, like the way that they handle themselves on the field during high school, I feel like is very aggressive.
You know, like I can only speak to like my high school experience. Like again, I'm very fortunate that like the head coach on the team that I coach is a very like-minded individual. He breeds positivity. Like that's what he does. Like that guy I would have wanted to play for when I was younger because he would have made me think every time I come up to the box like I'm hitting a nuke, right?
Right.
But I will say like the best coaching staff in my opinion is probably Blair and then Beatrice. Blair is I think there's four female coaches and one male coach. They are a very aggressive team. Like they are going to go out and they are going to take chances. They're going to make like game-saving ESPN type plays because that's what they were taught. And Beatrice, who is head coached by a male, also one of the best teams in the state, they're gonna be a little bit different. They're more fundamentally sound. They're not gonna take as many chances. They're gonna beat you by playing the game. So I think like each gender brings something different, you know. Like I think Blair's head coach, she has a lot to prove, you know, and she goes out there and her team reflects that because they make it known.
So you're basically saying it has a lot more to do with the personality of the person rather than the gender.
Yeah,
gender
for sure.
Shouldn't be playing a role in it at all in my mind. It's I mean you have bad females and you have bad males and you have bad female coaches and you have bad male coaches and you have great female coaches and you have great male coaches.
I think like, it's a lot easier as a female athlete to be able to relate to a female coach.
100%.
You know, and I also think that's part of the reason why like Blair's coach, she's very relatable to her players. She's young, energetic, outgoing.
Yeah, I do think it is always important to have like a female on staff.
100%.
But
yes.
I've also heard from like athletes that I coach that like they cannot stand an all-female staff.
I could see that as well.
Like, which I thought was crazy because like, you know, coming from a guy playing male sports, like we always had male coaches. I can't recall a time that I had a female coach, you know? So like, I personally would be okay with same gender coaches, but it's weird to me to hear softball players say they prefer male coaches.
Well, on
that
topic, I do think, and I mean, this might sound bad, but I do think it's easier to play for a male coach than it is for a female coach. It's a lot easier to get angry with a female, in my opinion. Like, as a female, if a woman, or like if I was young and I was playing for a female coach and she said something to me that I didn't like, it'd be a lot easier for me to get upset with her. Yeah. Than it would be for me to get upset with a male, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I had a high school female coach, but she was amazing. I mean, I can't actually remember I don't remember ever getting upset with her, ever.
Yeah.
But she was awesome. And I was also coached by a male coach in basketball a lot, and a male coach in softball in college. And I do think somehow or another, maybe I looked at both of them, like all of them, in different ways just because of their gender. Like, I don't think it was more of a respect thing. I think it was just more of a, like...
a standard?
Yeah, maybe that's it. Like, I was just like, oh, shit. He wants me to do it, so I'm going to go do it. I got
to
get it done.
Well, it's a lot easier to talk back to your mom than it is your dad.
Yes, yeah. I feel like that's what it is.
Kind of like jumping into that, because with our other assistant, I've noticed, like, she's a little more cool, calm, and collective and quiet. But when she says something, you should listen,
yeah.
Right? And our girls struggled with that at first. Like, hey, Nicole told us to tuck our shirt in.
Well, and I think it's more of a friend thing, too.
Yeah,
like, because even on our 18s, and I always mess with, John knows this because I always mess with him.
I'm soft.
But I call him Coach John, and I'm always screwing with him, and they call me Coach Hislop. But I feel like they look at me a lot of times as more sort of like a friend,
yeah.
And like one of them, and I'll like kind of gang up on him with them. I'm like, okay, Coach John, let's do what Coach John says. And they're always like, yeah, we'll do what Coach John, we'll put the bunts down, Coach John. Like, okay, and then they swing away. And I'm like, all right, that's my bad. Like, okay, you guys really should put the bun down.
Yeah, definitely.
You know? And I mean, I think once, like, we mess with John a lot. I mean, I think there was even at one time one of our girls that he did bunt a lot. Speaking of bunts, he let her hit away, and she hit a home run. And they, as they were coming around the bases, they were all like, don't bunt, sass, don't bunt, sass. Like, that was their chance. She was coming in, and John was like, you guys, she's a great bunter. Like, I've got a bunter. She can put it wherever she wants.
But, like, I put a lot of, like.
And I was right back there. I was like, don't bunt, sass.
But I put a lot of, like, strategy into our lineup, though. Like,
yeah, no, like, for sure. Like, I agree. I'm just picking.
One through three, we'll get on base. 3, 4, and 5, we'll hit home runs. 6, 7, 8, we'll get on base.
Yeah.
9, we'll hit them home,
yeah.
And start the lineup back over. So, like,
no, we get
I always
it. We
go
get
into
it.
A game
strategy.
With strategy, right?
Like,
and I hate to say this, but, like, if there's a girl on third base and there's no outs,
you're going to bunt.
Like, I'm getting that run across.
Yeah,
I'm
for
sorry.
Sure.
Like,
for
that's our job.
Ducks
in
the pond, man. Got to send them home. I get it.
I think it would be great if everybody hit nothing but line drives all day long and we cleared bases like that. But, like, sometimes small ball is the way to go.
Yeah,
so.
No, you don't have to explain yourself. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, I get it. Like,
all right, so speaking
it's easy
of
to
which,
look at female coaches as your peers.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of which, well, just like watching you guys talk, I think next episode should definitely be more or less about travel softball. But I also want to dive into, this is your guys' first year coaching, Izzy. So I want to definitely dive into that. I think that'd be cool. Because I also coach my daughter on our 14, so.
Well, I think that's a good topic to talk about anyways.
Yeah, definitely.
I think a lot of people
struggle with it really hard.
Oh, yeah.
It's
going to be awesome listening to Sammy and John, because I watch them coach together, and when Izzy comes in,
like,
the
be nice
play,
to her.
Yeah, so it's going to be super cool, because I actually, John and I kind of had like a mutual agreement that wasn't really an agreement, but basically it was, he's not going to coach his kid and I'm not going to coach my kid. We would let each other do that. And
it's not working.
We'll talk about how well it's been working. But
I hate daddy ball though. Like yeah. I can't do that. And like, my kid's a pitcher, and she's
but this
a good
is for
pitcher.
Next episode.
I know,
yeah.
But like,
next episode.
Just context,
next episode.
Right? Like, she's a pitcher. She's a good pitcher. Like, she's also the youngest player on the team, and I get really frustrated with her. But I've also been very spoiled because our 18s play at a really high level and don't require a whole heck of a lot of actual coaching.
For
they
sure.
Just require, like, the mental, hey, you got it, bud. So I'm struggling with that a little bit. So, and I'll be the first one to admit that. So.
But it's been a good time.
Yeah. It's been something. It's been something.
No, we're figuring it out. We have girls that want to play softball at a high level, and we're getting through it.
All right, that's about all the time that we got for today. As we progress, we're going to get better at this, right? It's our first time doing it. Way different format than just making a 60-second video on TikTok. But it's something that we're very passionate about, is just youth sports in general, the mindset, the mentality of an athlete and what it takes to succeed at a high level. And I think the older that I've gotten, the more impressed I am by just athleticism in general, regardless of what sport you're playing. Obviously I'm baseball, softball for life, but, you know, like, kudos and respect to any athlete that can go out there and perform at a high level day in and day out. And that's kind of what this is all about. So make sure that you guys ask questions, any type of content that you guys want in future episodes. We would be more than happy to sit down and discuss. With Sam and I's platform on social media, we also have potential guests that are going to come in and do podcast episodes with us as well. Really looking forward to that. Some high level players. People that have played in college, people that are currently playing professionally. But as always, thank you guys for taking the time out to listen, to watch, to support us. And we'll see you next episode, Between the Lines.